Days of Unleavened Bread and Passover. Passover, specifically, we've talked about for the last few weeks, really trying to ingrain in our mind those things that we need to do as a people, as God's people, to help us prepare. And we understand that Passover now is only about, 16 days away? And I think it's safe to say that all of us in this room have been preparing for that, not only starting to remove the leavening from our house, but even more importantly, looking at those areas of our lives where we have made progress. Possibly those areas of our lives where we've removed that sin. We've been looking at our relationship with God. We've contemplated the growth. We've also contemplated those areas of our lives where we just haven't been able to overcome yet, or even those areas that we thought were gone. Maybe they've been gone for a couple of years. Who knows? But they are back. Again, all of us have those areas in our lives that we still need to overcome. Those areas of sin in our lives that continue to rear their ugly head all too often. The title of my message today isn't necessarily very creative. It's simply overcoming. What I want to do, though, is I want to look at this topic from a slightly different angle, I think. And I want to talk about today the courage of four men. And those are Abishai, Sibbecai, Elhanan, and Jonathan. Right? I'm sure you've all read their stories, but do you remember them? You see, everyone here knows the story very well of David and Goliath. We've taught it to our children. They know the story. It's a great story, right? Goliath, the Philistine, defies. It talks about he defies the Israelites, defies the army of God, meaning in some places they say he taunted them. He dishonored them. And young David came from out of the crowd and with great courage stood up, defended the honor of God, and he slew this giant with the slingshot. And I know for myself in the 30-some years that I've been in the church, I've heard countless messages on the story, and I've learned a lot of lessons from it, and I'm sure you have too. How many sermonettes and sermons have been given on the story of David and Goliath? Our children, again, know the story well. But I want to ask you, why don't our children know about the amazing courage and honor of Abishai and Sibbecai and Elhanan and Jonathan? And you're saying, well, I know those guys. I read about them. I recognize their names. Well, let me tell you, those four guys did the exact same thing that King David did. Every one of them slew a Philistine giant. As a matter of fact, every one of them slew an immediate family member of Goliath. Does it ring a bell yet? Do you remember them? Do you remember their story? Have you heard of them? You see, we don't tell their heroic tale to our children very often. And I don't remember them being used much in sermons, but we're going to do that today. Today we're going to look at the story of these four men who, just like David, stood up against a Philistine giant alone, apparently helpless and seemingly at great odds that they were going to lose their life, to actually accomplish such a feat. We're going to see that they did, and they were successful. We're going to see today, though, what we as Christians can learn from their story, from their example that's kind of, I think, faded into the pages of our Bible, kind of into obscurity. Turn with me, if you will, to 2 Samuel chapter 21. We're going to find this account here. You can mark that spot, too, because we'll also look at 1 Chronicles chapter 20, which is where the parallel account is written. So let's start. 2 Samuel chapter 21. Let's start in verse 15. 2 Samuel 21, verse 15. It says, when the Philistines were at war, and notice what it says again, with Israel, David and his servants with him went down and fought against the Philistines. And David grew faint. The If you want, again, hold your place there, you can turn over to 1 Chronicles 20, where the parallel account is. I'll read that to you. 1 Chronicles 20, verse 4, it says, "Now it happened afterward that war broke out at Gezer with the Philistines." So, again, we're jumping into the story at this point. David, many years before this, had slain Goliath. And we can see as we read through 2 Samuel here that the Philistines just always kept coming back. They were kind of a thorn in David's side. They seemed that they were always at war. The Israelites were always at war with them. And as I was preparing this message, one of the things that struck me, and I thought for a minute briefly, is why didn't they just beat him once and for all? You know? Lock him up. Tell him not to come back. Why couldn't they conquer and vanquish this one constant enemy? Anyway, that's a side thought. Let's go back to verse 15 of 2 Samuel. We're going to see here that David now is beginning to show his age. Right? It says he grew faint. So he's aging. He's tiring easily. And he just isn't up to the fight. Does that sound familiar? As we look at these lessons from these few verses that we're going to look at, does that sound like you sometimes? No, you've been fighting that same enemy year after year, and it just won't go away. Maybe when you were younger, like David, you know, you had a great victory. You really thought you dealt sin a blow. Again, just like David when he was young, he slew the giant David, or Goliath. He cut off his head. Remember those days? You overcame something. You were victorious. You felt like you could do anything now. You could fight any foe. You could win any battle. You could overcome any sin. Again, like the Israelites we're seeing here in our lives today, it just didn't happen that way, did it? It just kept coming back again, as it talked about here. Again and again, every year after year, we're fighting the same battles. And you wonder sometimes, why can't I have any peace? Why can't I just vanquish this and be done with it? Why do I have to keep on fighting? You know, just like David fighting the Philistines, we're at war too. A constant battle, and it seems that it's never going to end. Turn to 2 Corinthians, please, chapter 10. 2 Corinthians, chapter 10. Let's read verses 3 through 5. Again, this war we're at, this battle that we fight every day, it's never ending. In this life, it will be never ending. 2 Corinthians, chapter 10, starting in verse 3. It says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, for casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of Christ, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ." See, brethren, you and I have been fighting a spiritual battle ever since that day when God first called you. When He first called us, ever since that day, we've been fighting that battle. And our enemy, of course, we understand, is Satan the devil. And he's not going to go away. He's not going to leave us alone. We struggle against him every day. At that point when God called us, we understand that we had to go to war against him. And you remember that day when you were first baptized? The energy you felt. And you thought, I'm going to win. I'm going to beat this guy once and for all. Early on, we're not going to deal with this. Right? We thought we could win no matter what. And then we got into knowing more. And we got into realizing this is a long battle for me. And we looked at ourselves and we thought, how can I possibly overcome such a giant of an enemy? are we going to do that? What could we possibly do to conquer this sin, this evil world that we live in? We're surrounded by it all the time, that we're a part of. When we begin to learn that everything that we had known and everything that we had come out of in regards to this world and our values and our past beliefs were represented by this evil enemy, Satan the devil. And then again, that day, there was that day in all of us, for all of us, that we threw a deadly blow to the enemy and we were baptized. It was like a death blow to our enemy. And we thought at that point, we won. We're victorious. You remember everybody hugging you and congratulating you? You're on top of the world. And you felt like, at that point, everything was great, right? We were at peace. But it wasn't to last. Mine lasted about 35 minutes. As I left the house where I was baptized, driving to church in Peoria, Illinois, with those crazy drivers, and that guy about ran into me, I felt pretty defeated. Because I didn't think what I should have at the time. But, again, we realized that not long after we were baptized that the peace wasn't going to last. There were more battles to fight. The enemy was not dead. It was as if he had sons, as if he had family. And early on, every one of us then realized we had to summon that courage deep down to continue to fight, to not give in no matter what. And we realized that this is going to work the way it was going to be for the rest of our lives. Let's go back to 2 Samuel, chapter 21. Let's pick up the story here in verse 16. This particular account here is only recorded in 2 Samuel. And it says this. It says, then Ishbi-benob, who was one of the sons of the giant. So again, he's Goliath's son. He's probably recognized as the Philistines' champion. So 2 Samuel verse 16, and Ishbi-benob, who was one of the sons of the giant, the weight of whose bronze spear was 300 shekels, so about 8 pounds, who was bearing a new sword, thought he could kill David. You remember in verse 15, talked about David was faint. So this guy's probably thinking, I could really help him. Maybe I'm going to see if I kill David. Right? He could be famous. It goes on here. Here's the name we talked about, Abishai. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, came to his aid, struck the Philistine, and killed him. Now, understand that Abishai is kind of like the chief of staff of King David. He had a significant role for King David. So, now I've probably watched too many action movies, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and all these things. But I play this in my head, this movie. I can see this giant racing toward this little bitty fella, right? To kill King David, to thrust this giant sword into King David. And Abishai reacts in a split second, probably does a cartwheel or something, you know. Again, this video in my head, too many action movies. But he leaps forward just in time to get his shield over David. He protects him, right? The giant glances this blow off that shield and is enraged at this guy who's kept him from killing David. I can see him looking at Abishai now, thinking he's going to kill him, but this small man, Abishai, dodges that. And in a split second, he's the one who thrusts the sword into Ishbi-benob and kills him. See, the Philistines once again sent their giant champion, and he's been killed. So at this point, then, the Philistines, they leave. They hightail it for home. But for us, once again, we see this small man seemingly completely outmatched defeat this giant of an enemy who would dare strike at the king of Israel. Going on here in verse 16, we see that the men around King David are kind of concerned for their aging king. Then the men of David swore to him, saying, "You shall go out no more with us to battle, lest you quench the lamp of Israel." In other words, they're saying, "Come on, boss, we don't want you to die. You're our leader. You're the light that we follow. We can't risk you getting killed in battle. You stay home. Let us take care of you." Let's pause here for just a minute. When you think about this story, whether it's without my embellishment, my little video going on in my head, do you think perhaps God was instrumental in letting Abishai defeat this giant? Again, we see Ishbi-Nob looks at David and he thinks he's physically weak. He thinks that he's helpless against him. And who's with David? This weak, puny Abishai. Logically speaking, this shouldn't have been allowed to happen this way. I imagine, again, in my mind, Abishai being, I don't know, like a jockey, horse jockey, small stature, you know, 5 foot, small stature. And I imagine Ishbi-Benob, you know, from my own visual, is this giant NFL lineman. I think he doesn't have a chance. It's not possible. He's not going to win without some help. And I wonder to myself, why didn't Abishai just look at this giant running at him and leave? Save his own skin. Fight to live, you know, live to fight another day. Why did he keep fighting for his king despite the overwhelming, seemingly overwhelming evidence that he was probably going to die in the process? I guess my real question is this: what are we learning from this that we can apply to our lives today? Let's go on with the story here in verse 18. So, verse 18 says, "Now it happened afterward that there was again a battle with the Philistines at Gob. And then Sibekai the Hushathite killed Saph, who was one of the sons of the giant." So a son now of Goliath was killed by Sibekai. You can hold your place if you want. You can look at the account in 1 Chronicles 20, verse 4. A parallel account says this. It says, "At which time Sibekai the Hushathite killed Sipai," which is just another name for Saph, "who was one of the sons of the giant, and they were subdued." So again, to me, kind of amazingly, the Philistines never seem to give up. Right? They keep coming back. Again, they've sent their giant champion against Israel. You see here his name is Saph, or Sipai, apparently, again, a son of Goliath. And understand, again, King David isn't there because his advisors have said, please stay home. Let us take care of it. And so we see, verse 18, Sibekai, in this case, steps forward and takes care of business. And we have no other details of the story except what it says right here, but all we know is that he won. Again, think about this. Over seemingly impossible odds, and with God's direct intervention. Notice what it says here, verse 18. It says, notice the result. It says, "The Philistines are subdued." Other translations say that they were humbled and defeated. So clearly we can see here, brethren, that God is showing his power to defeat these strong enemies, even when it seemed absolutely impossible to do so. Okay, so let's back to 2 Samuel 21, verse 19 this time. It starts out with again. There was war at Gob with the Philistines. So again, remember here it's the same location where Elhanan, the son of Jehoiakim, the Bethlehemite, killed the brother of Goliath the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. 1 Chronicles 20, verse 5, the parallel account says this. It says, again, there was war with the Philistines, and Elhanan, the son of Jer, killed Lami, another name here they're calling this giant, the brother of Goliath the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like a weaver's beam. Well, first thing I wonder is, how big is a weaver's beam? According to the research that I found, it said this. It says, this spear would have been about 3 inches in diameter, about 6 feet long, and had a 15-pound spearhead on it. So, it's pretty big, right? It's massive. Imagine the kind of man that's able to use that weapon effectively. And again, it doesn't tell us here, but you know, again, the research says Lami must have been close to 9 feet tall or better. He's a giant man. And again, very few tales are provided, but we're left to wonder, or I am anyway, what's wrong with those Philistines? Why can't they just learn their lesson? Why can't they learn to stop sending their giants after the Israelites? Because they're not going to win. But again, we see, again and again, they keep sending them, and again, we have an unknown man, in this case, Elhanan, barely mentioned in the Bible, displaying incredible courage and trust in God to slay this giant. Again, described here as a brother of Goliath, not a son, but again a giant. See the pattern, the repetitiveness of what I'm saying. God clearly demonstrating for our example, and obviously at the time for the direct example for the Israelites, just demonstrating over and over again that despite the continuing attacks by these giants, that he's going to defend Israel and use small, seemingly helpless, maybe defenseless people. When you look at the size difference, he's going to use these people, these men, to accomplish this miraculous task. But we're not done yet. Look at verse 20. 2 Samuel 21, verse 20. It says, yet again, there was war at Gath, and there was a man of great stature who had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 in number, and he was also born to the giant. Again, we're talking about a son at this time. And it says, so when he defied Israel, Jonathan, the son of Shimea, David's brother, killed him. I find this very interesting. Again, so it talks about, so when he defied Israel, up to this point, he might have been just walking around, yelling taunts across there, you know, whatever, yelling back and forth. But it wasn't until he defied Israel's God, just taunting them, just downgrading them, that Jonathan stepped up and he killed him. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 6, the account there repeats this almost word for word. But there are a couple things here to notice. Once again, we can see clearly he's a giant, but he's an oddity. It describes him as having 6 fingers and 6 toes on his hands and feet. Now I'm left to wonder if the Philistines didn't try one last time to send this guy, because maybe they thought their gods, with a little chief, maybe gave this guy some extra power because he had these fingers and toes. Maybe they thought that he would be extra intimidating to the Israelites. I don't know. I find it interesting, though. But maybe they thought they were finally going to use this freak of nature, if you will, to defeat Israel. And again, it says here, he defied Israel. It doesn't talk about the other giants, with the exception of Samson. Having defied Israel, perhaps they did too, but it's not mentioned specifically anywhere except in this word, David and Goliath, and again here, that they defied the armies of the living God. And we see that Jonathan wasn't going to let that happen. Again, brethren, to me, the story as I look at it, Jonathan, I think, was of average size. He was no match, physically speaking, for the giant. How could he, I wonder, how could he find the courage to do that? To step up against this giant. How could he find the courage? I think part of it is he knew that recent history. He probably knew the other three guys ahead of him who had stepped up and done this, and he thought, now it's my turn. He had seen God's hand evident in slaying these other giants. And I think showing that Jonathan had extreme faith in God, that once again God would come through and give him the strength to conquer this giant enemy. So we're really left to ask this question. And it is, have you seen the evidence? Do you know for a fact in your life that God will intervene for you and give you the strength to conquer your giant spiritual enemy? Are you honest with yourself? If you're honest with yourself, haven't you seen him stand up and fight for you before and deliver you from your enemies? What are the things that we need to fight against our enemies that seem to keep coming back at us time and time again, just like the Philistines? They thought they were done with them. Finally, we killed their Philistine giant. They won't be back. What do we need to fight our enemies, our giant enemies that keep coming back? Turn back to Ephesians chapter 6, please. We talked about earlier that even those giants that we've slain in the past, how they come back in our lives, they revisit us. We have to attack them again. We have to fight them again. We have to go to battle. What do we need to be able to continue to fight against those enemies that seem to keep coming back at us time and time again? Ephesians 6, let's start reading in verse 10. It says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might." Verse 11, "Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places." Verse 13, "Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand." I think we all understand. We've seen, and we can read so many places. We clearly recognize the source of our spiritual problems come from Satan the devil. And we need to be able to use God's Holy Spirit to put on, as he talks about here, the whole armor of God against those continuous attacks that we're bombarded with. But I ask the question too, what have we also noticed in this story here, the slaying of the four giants of the Philistines, that we must apply as we fight our spiritual battles every day, as we strive to overcome? My main point is that I'm getting at here is that we have to be courageous. We have to trust God. And most of all, we have to go on the offensive. Right? We have to take the battle to the enemy. We can't just sit back, stick our head in the sand, and hope that he doesn't find us. It doesn't work that way. We have to take the battle to our enemy and destroy him again and again. And we're still going to ask, why does this enemy keep coming at us? Why does he continue to attack us in the same way, in the same places, over and over again? Why did the Philistines keep coming back? Did they finally think that they were just going to get tired of the battle and give up? What are your giants? Spiritual giants. Who cares if you slay them or not? Who's going to notice? You see, just like these giant slayers that we've found hidden away in these obscure chapters of 2 Samuel and 1 Chronicles, who's going to know that the courage it took for you to fight against your spiritual enemies? Obviously, God knows. You understand that. God knows. He'll notice. And perhaps your story will be written about something. See, brethren, as a congregation, there are many of these giants out there among us that we keep struggling with. You have your own. They've attacked you time and time again, haven't they? Perhaps you thought your giant was slain and gone for good when you were baptized. Maybe like me, you thought that and you were surprised. But they keep coming back to try to destroy you over and over again. What are your giants? Well, some giants that some people face could include things like extended health problems. Maybe there are severe financial difficulties. Maybe there are family problems or relationship problems. Maybe they're hurt feelings, angerness, bitterness. Perhaps your giant is a lack of trust. Maybe you feel betrayed and let down by others, so you put up a wall or a barrier just to keep that from ever happening again. Are your giants, brethren? See, there are other things that become giants for us because we're simply just fearful of them. There may be things that are simply that simply cause us to be afraid, whether it's logical or not. In church years ago, one of my giants was the fear of ever being asked to give an opening and closing prayer. That's not funny. For those of you who remember your first opening or closing prayer, It was a big deal for me. That was one of my giants. But they can be slain. For the guys, remember that first time that you were asked to give a sermonette or a split sermon? And you thought to yourself, I'm never coming back to this church again. Right? No, they got the wrong guy. What other giants might we face? What is it that keeps you from growing spiritually? Perhaps your fear is meeting new people, or we heard in the sermonette last week, the need to extend hospitality to others or be more hospitable. Maybe that's a fear you have. Maybe that's one of your giants. Maybe you're afraid to fail. Maybe you're afraid to be embarrassed. Or you're afraid of being rejected by someone. You see, things like that can be as giants before us because we're just too afraid to face them. We're too afraid to tackle them. We could spend a lot of time just going through all of the things that we're supposed to do. We look at the Ten Commandments. We look at those areas of specific sin in our lives that we're trying to overcome. They just keep coming back. strength and the courage this year to once and for all trust in the power of God to help us, to put those things behind us. Turn back to Joshua, if you would. Sometimes I think we've forgotten what God said to Joshua as he was facing a giant. And not a physical giant in this case, but remember, Joshua had led the Israelites to the promised land, in this case replacing Moses, which again, that's kind of big shoes to fill, right? But see, they're going to be comparing me to Moses. I can imagine him thinking that. Joshua 1, let's start in verse 5. God said to Joshua as he was considering these things. He said, Joshua, no man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. And he tells Joshua, be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Verse 7, only be strong, he says, and of good courage, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. Verse 8, the book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Finally, verse 9, he says, have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Do you believe that? See, you need to. We have to believe that. God says, God says the same thing to us as he did to Joshua. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed. The Lord your God is with you wherever you go. You see, I think David's men knew this. Because I think King David had taught them this. Why did they have the courage to stand up to these unbelievable odds to fight a giant? They believed that the power of God was what helped David slay Goliath ahead of them. And they knew this. They had the faith to believe that God would deliver them too. See, brethren, it seems that few people remember these men that we're talking about this morning. These four men who did the same thing with David. These giant killers we've talked about aren't commonly known, but they faced what, again, should have been certain death, in my opinion. But they found the courage, because of their faith in God, to slay their giants. And they had a great example to follow. Of course, King David had done that prior to them. Perhaps their courage came from believing that God would surely help them, their noble cause too, and be with them just as he was with King David. About you? Where is your courage going to come from? Who is our example that should teach us that we should have great faith and great courage to once again take up the sword of battle and march back out there and attack that spiritual giant that we're fighting with and destroy him, yes, yet once again? Have we considered, again, the example and the courage of Jesus Christ? Brethren, what can we learn from the example of Abishai and Sibbecai, Elhanan and Jonathan that we can't give up? We can't give up. We have to keep fighting our giants, even though they are their brothers. Or their sons, keep coming at us. They're going to return again and again. So going to require us to have the courage and have the strength to address them and to defeat them time and time again, because we understand Satan's not going to give up. Your battle isn't going to be over until Christ sets foot on this earth. You can expect your giant to rise up again and again, but are you going to let it get you down? Are you going to be discouraged, or are you going to be determined to continue fighting no matter what? Are you going to continue fighting no matter what it takes to destroy that enemy once and for all? Let's look at one last scripture as we begin to wrap up, back in 2 Timothy chapter 4. I want you to remember as we wrap this up, these words that Paul said right before he passed away, right before he died. Second Timothy chapter 4, verse 7. Paul said this again right before he died. He said, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith." But after the word came to David for the fourth time, the Philistine giant from Gath had been slain in a miraculous way by one of his men, David realized at that point how God was continuing to offer his blessings and protection. And he wrote a song that includes some of these words. It says, "Thee will I love, O Lord, my might, my rock, my help, my saving power. My God, my trust, my shield and fight, my great salvation, my high tower. So to the eternal is my prayer, to whom all praise we owe. So shall I by his watchful care safely be guarded from my foe." Brethren, let's trust in God. Let's be filled with courage. Let's go out and overcome. And let's go out and slay some giants.